Now, let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're in dialogue today with Congressman Mike Hill, District 1, State of Florida. We're talking about the different legislative actions that's being taken this legislative session going into the session in January, the bills that are being deliberated, debated, and discussed in the different committees. We've just been talking about the heartbeat bill, the bill that will allow, will prevent abortion once the heartbeat is detected in the womb of the mother. Congressman, I find it antithetical that we are not concerned about the life of a human being in the mother's womb. And yet, let me read to you and our listeners, perhaps you're familiar with this. Title of this article says, Senate unanimously passes bill making animal cruelty a federal felony. In a rare showing of bipartisan support, Senate lawmakers on Tuesday unanimously passed a bill making animal cruelty a federal felony. The bill, which now goes to President Trump for a final signature, was sponsored by Florida Representative Ted Deutch and Vern Buchanan. It comes 2 weeks after the House passed it on a voice vote. Further, it says Deutch, a Democrat, said the bill sends a clear message that our society does not accept cruelty against animals. Buchanan, a Republican, said the torture of innocent animals is abhorrent and should be punished to the fullest extent of the law. Senator Pat Toomey, Representative Republican in Pennsylvania, who spearheaded the bill, who shepherded the bill, that is, through Congress with Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat of Connecticut, called it a major victory in efforts to halt animal cruelty and make communities safer. And I made a little marginal note on that article. What about human life? Abortion is murder. Is it not considered murder? But yet now it's a federal felony if you harm an animal, but we can continue to destroy human beings in the mother's womb? Speak to that for just a moment, Congressman.
Well, it's cognitive dissonance. It doesn't even make sense. So first of all, let me applaud them. It's good that we don't want to have cruelty to animals. You know, yes. God gave us this creation to tend for it, and it takes care of it. That's good. But why on earth would you do that and not think that it's cruel to tear a baby apart in the mother's womb, to rip it apart, to insert chemicals in there to burn the baby alive while it's in the mother's womb? Why is that not cruel and unusual? What they are doing is they are worshiping creation instead of the creator.
Amen.
God created these animals. That's what they are worshiping. But God also made us in his own image. And so they don't want to worship the creator. They don't want to worship what is in his own image. And I'm not saying worship man. You should not. But what they are denying is the fact that human life is intrinsic, that it has value, that instead they want to kill it simply out of convenience, that they can have their own lifestyle that they want, that they can make money off of it like Planned Parenthood does. That is so abhorrent that we have a society today where Planned Parenthood is being paid in the hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayers' dollars to kill children in the womb. God have mercy on us.
Not only to kill children in the womb, Congressman, but to, and I've watched a number of videos on that subject, some of the Veritas videos that's been produced that's exposed Planned Parenthood. And when they openly talk about and openly agree that they have special ways to do the abortion to be able to get the different body parts out without harming them so that they can market them, and the differing body parts that Planned Parenthood is marketing on an international baby body part market, they're marketing baby body parts anywhere from $25 to $250, $25,000, depending on the body part that they're marketing. And it seems as though we have nothing in Washington that has spine or backbone to take a stand and cut off all funds to Planned Parenthood. It is a murder abortion operation that taxpayers, as you said a moment ago, that we're funding. And I think it's antithetical to anything that's called a Christian nation, our morals and ethics and values in our nation today. And so I am thankful that you will take a stand that you have. And again, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking today with Congressman Mike Hill. He's a representative of District 1 in the state of Florida. And we invite you to call 831-0917, 831-0917. That telephone call gets your call right through to the studios and right to our microphones. Perhaps you have a question you'd like to ask Congressman Hill, or a discussion or a dialogue that you'd like to join in this discussion today. Congressman, let's make a brief transition. You've also introduced a bill that is 6003 in the House. And the 6003, if you want to just short the title of it, is just simply a gun bill. Speak to that bill, and then we're going to have dialogue and discussion on what does the bill do, why is it needed. What about that bill, 6003?
Well, what 6003 does, Dr. Youngblood, is repeal the unconstitutional parts of the law that was signed by Governor Scott shortly after the Parkland shooting took place. When that Parkland shooting took place, we had tens of thousands of people who descended on the Tallahassee Capitol, who were funded, by the way, by left-wing groups, most notably George Soros,
yes,
who took advantage of the tragedy that happened at the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School there in Parkland, Florida, where a deranged young man, and as you mentioned earlier, on psychotropic drugs, who came from a broken family, no father was present, and
right.
a very troubled young man came in and created an atrocity, murdered those young people. It's such a shame and so sad. It should not have happened if the law enforcement and other officials had been doing their job, looked at the signs that were there, that this young man should not have even have been on campus. But all of that aside, shortly after that mob descended on Tallahassee, emotions took over instead of remembering their oath of office, and a very bad bill was passed. Now, part of the bill had some good points, such as hardening our schools, making them more safer, providing funding for resource officers and mental health counselors. All of those measures there can actually help prevent a next tragedy from happening. But then they went too far. They also added a part that said 18 to 20-year-olds could not purchase a weapon in Florida. The Second Amendment said the right to bear arms shall not be infringed. Why on earth would an 18-year-old who can go off and serve this nation in the military and fight and defend this nation, but come to Florida and cannot fight and defend his own family that is left defenseless? That is utterly amazing. There was another part, the red flag laws, which have, since that bill was signed into law, over 2,654 people have had their due process rights deprived and have had their weapons taken from them. And a lot of that has happened simply because another person has made an accusation that they think this person could harm themselves or someone else. A completely egregious stamp, trampling on our Constitution.
Congressman, speak to that for just a moment for our listeners. I fear that many listeners today, not just in Northeast Florida, but across America, do not fathom what you've just said, that with the red flag law, it would allow someone to call, anonymously so, make a complaint or register a statement that could trigger it. Speak to that from the point of what can be done, what is happening with the red flag law, why is it egregious, what are the mechanisms in that that's so antithetical to our First, Second, Fourth, and 14th Amendment, and why should our citizens be concerned about it, especially here in the state of Florida?
Yes, what it does is it subverts our process of you are innocent until proven guilty. Instead, you are presumed guilty until you have to prove your own innocence. And the state will not provide you with a lawyer to prove your innocence. You have to do it yourself at your own cost. And what we have seen is some which are just tragic. I'll give you one that I am personally aware of because I know of this young man. It was a young man who was working for me in my business. And he said to himself that he was having trouble focusing at work. So he went to see a doctor and said, "Doctor, I'm having trouble focusing. Is there anything you can give me to help me focus more while I'm at work?" Well, the doctor said, "Let me ask you a few questions." He said, and as he was going through the questions, one of them he asked was, "Have you ever thought of hurting yourself?" And this guy was honest, and he said, "Well, yeah, I've thought about it before." The next question was, "Have you thought of using a weapon in terms of hurting yourself?" And this young man said, "Well, you know, if I was going to hurt myself, then use a weapon." "Yeah, I thought of that." They Baker acted him right there on the spot. So as he was taken to the facility where he was Baker acted, they asked him if he was concealed carry. He said, "Yes." They took his weapon from him right then. That was December of last year. To this day, he has not gotten his weapon back. Even though the doctor at the facility examined him and said, "No, he's fine. He shouldn't even be here." They still kept him for 72 hours. After he was released, he took the letter from the doctor saying he's perfectly fine to the police department. The police department still, to this day, has not released his weapon to him. Told him to go get a lawyer if that's what he wants. That's just one example. There are many. As I said, over 2,654 have had their weapons confiscated from them, and there are many, many, many examples of where.
Well, even as we speak on this broadcast today, Congressman, there's one case up in Baltimore where the very same thing happened, a very similar thing. His weapon was taken, and he has been in jail now, not in prison, but he's been in jail for 9 months. Waiting for his case to come up so that he can try to protect his Second Amendment rights and defend his freedom under the Constitution and our Bill of Rights. In the state of Florida, I believe it's what you can be incarcerated for up to 14 days before there's a required hearing. And sometimes, because of the clog in the courts, that does not happen. But what I want our listeners to understand is that not only when you're answering questions by a physician, by the way, I say that when you go to the doctor, and I'm not trying to give people legal advice, but my personal opinion, when I go to the doctor, if I've been depressed, if I feel bad, if I've had a dark day or a bad day, et cetera, it doesn't make any difference. I don't say anything to the doctor. It's not the doctor's business, because we need to understand that our physicians today are closely aligned with what I would simply call informers for the federal government and for the state government. Now, as a result of that, what I'm trying to get our listeners to understand, Congressman, somebody can make a telephone call and say, "There's that congressman. He's running up and down the street waving a AK-47. He's dangerous." And they could come in, smash your door, search your house, take your weapons without any opportunity for you to defend yourself until the charges have been made. Then, as you've said, you've got to prove you're innocent. That's the dangers of the red flag law. So now let's do the nexus with that. How does that connect with House Bill 6003 that you've introduced, and why should we, as we the people, why should we be interested, and what should we do to help you with that?
Well, House Bill 6003 repeals the red flag law. And where we need help from your listeners, Dr. Youngblood, is for them to call their state representative and their state senator and ask them to support this bill, to co-sponsor it, to give this bill a hearing and a debate. Now, what I'm finding, unfortunately, Dr. Youngblood, is that there are too many politicians, and I use that word disparagingly, there are too many politicians who are concerned about the next election coming up in 2020, and that if they take a principled stand on what is right, of what they should actually be doing, then that may jeopardize either their election or one of their colleagues' election who is in a district that is left-leaning or is already blue. They are afraid that if they do something that will make the left mad, that it will rile up the base of the left. They'll come out in force and vote against them in the next election, which is such a cowardly position that I am severely disappointed in anyone who would take that position. And the reason why I get so disappointed in them, Dr. Youngblood, is because they seem to fail to understand the gravity and severity of their oath of office. When they were elected, they took an oath that they solemnly swore to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. Now, the U.S. Constitution and the Florida Constitution. Now, I understand the gravity of that oath. And what I mean by that is when I said that oath, Dr. Youngblood, it was not simply between me and the judge administering that oath. And it was not simply between me and my constituents, though it was. When I said that oath, it was between me and the living God. I was promising God that I would protect and defend our Constitution. So when it comes under attack, like it did from that bill, that law signed after the Parkland shooting, it is my duty.
Absolutely.
It is my fulfilling my solemn oath to God that I must protect and defend our Constitution. And that's why I filed House Bill 6003 to repeal those parts of that Parkland shooting, which you aptly described, trample on our First, Second, Fourth, Fifth, and 14th Amendment to the Constitution. It steps all over every one of those. And if you have any fidelity to your oath at all, you would stand up and say, we cannot have this. That law never should have been signed. It never should have even had been debated. There should have been courage of our elected officials to stand up to all those thousands who came and said, I'm sorry for your pain. I'm sorry for this tragedy. But as an elected official, I said an oath to protect the Constitution, and I will not break my oath to God and trample on our Constitution.
Amen.
But that didn't happen.
I am prayerful that we will have it. If I can insert this, Congressman Hill, I believe that it would be incumbent upon our listeners, especially in Northeast Florida. We have Senator Aaron Bean. Get on the telephone and call Senator Bean. Ask him to see that this is co-sponsored in the Senate. Ask him to get on board with it. I'm asking our listeners, I'm asking you, ladies and gentlemen, call Representative Clay Yarbrough, call Representative Jason Fisher, call Senator Bradley. I know a number of these men in Tallahassee, in the House and the Senate, that say they love the Lord, that they're committed to the Constitution, that they're there to serve we the people and to do what is right based on the state and the federal Constitution. Call these representatives and these senators. Urge them, encourage them, benevolently challenge them to get on board with this. I don't know of any other bill that's any more important, or bills, I should say, than the heartbeat bill and the gun control bill, the one that will absolutely nullify the red flag laws. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, there's 17 states that have red flag laws. Right now, there's a major push in the U.S. House of Representatives and in the Senate. In fact, many of our conservative senators and representatives in Washington have already verbalized the fact that they'd be willing to sign on to a federal red flag law. And I think it'd be the worst thing possible for the Second Amendment for us to do so. So call your senators, call our representatives, call them now, call them today. Be involved in this process before it is too late. We need to get these bills into committees. We need to get them through the committees, and we need to have them on the floor for open debate. If it's on the floor, Congressman, if we can get them on the floor for open debate, if it is a vote up or a vote down, I'm satisfied. We just need to get these bills on the floor so that they can be openly debated and have the input from we the people. So we stand with you, and we're praying for God to intercede and to give you wisdom and strength as you continue to do the battle for us in the Florida House. I am so thankful for what's being done. I don't know if our listeners even understand that there is an amendment that's proposed for the 2020 ballot in the state of Florida, an amendment, and there are a number of them, and I'll just focus on one now. Here's the article that says, Florida Firearms Background Checks and Waiting Period Initiative for 2020. And I'm sure, Congressman, you're aware of this, but in this constitutional amendment that's being proposed, they already have the 700-some-odd thousand petition signed to get it on the ballot for 2020. What we're watching is the circumventing of our representative form of government and placing everything that we want as law on the Florida Constitution. And this requires then the background check, background period of time to be elongated. And if that passes and it goes to the voters on in 2020, November the 3rd of 2020. And if it passes by the voters, it will make it almost impossible for me as a citizen to give my wife my weapon or to give my weapon to my son. Anytime a transaction like that takes place, it would mean you got to go through the background check all over again. Even if you get your license to carry permit, it's not automatically renewed. You got to go through a brand new background check again. Speak to that, Congressman, about the dangers that we see looming in relationship to gun control laws, not only in Florida, but across the nation. And what is the potential if we become disarmed as a nation?
Well, what you mentioned, Dr. Youngblood, is even in a broader context, the fact that if we get enough petition signed, that would come up for a vote to become a part of our Constitution. What a lot of people don't realize is that Florida is one state that's being targeted by outside organizations that they're not even in Florida. And they're being influenced by left-leaning organizations such as George Soros and others who pay people to come into our state to get these signatures on these petitions. And what it does is, it, as you have stated, it takes away from our representative form of government. And instead of having a republic, which says that mob rule does not is not primary, that is exactly what is happening with getting these signatures on these petitions, that the majority or democracy is what rules. And our founding fathers were completely against a democracy. Instead, they gave us a representative republic. The difference between the two is a democracy says whatever the majority wants, which is wrong. The republic says it's what the majority wants as long as it is in conformance with the law, the rule of law, the laws of nature and of nature's God. And so what we're finding is that they might have the signatures now to get it on the ballot, but there's another process, another step. The language of the ballot has to be approved by the Supreme Court, saying that it is not ambiguous, that it is clear, that anyone reading it will completely understand it. And that has been challenged by our Attorney General, Ashley Moody, to the Supreme Court, stating that it is not clear, it is not unambiguous, and that voters who are voting on that would not have the ability to know exactly what the ramifications would be. So let's hope that this new conservative Florida Supreme Court will also see it this way and not allow this terrible ballot measure to get on our constitutional ballot for vote next year.
Yes, I'm looking at it now, Article 1, Section 8, the right to bear arms, and it's sponsored by the Floridians for universal background checks, and that is a LLC, it's a corporate entity, and I believe, if I am not mistaken in my limited research on it, it is sponsored, bought, and paid for, and being contributed by George Soros and one of his 200, he has over 209 organizations operative like that across America, and it's being funded, as you said, by outside sources that could care less about the state of Florida. But it's my prayer that we, our people, our listeners today, will come to the forefront, will call our House and our senators, our House members and our senators, and ask them to be involved and to sponsor and co-sponsor your bills and to get them into committees, and they can be brought out of committees and put on the floor for an open vote. Let's make a quick transition, Congressman, for a moment. There is a bill that is, I believe, it's House Bill 265, which is now in committee, that would require parents to give consent before a minor child can have an abortion. I believe you're familiar with that bill. If you would speak to that bill and what it does and why that is also so vital.
Yes, that bill was sponsored by Representative Aaron Grawl. I am complete in support of it. I'm a co-sponsor of that bill simply because that bill doesn't do what my heartbeat bill does. Doesn't mean that I'm against it. It is another measure to help prevent unnecessary abortions in Florida. Essentially what it says is that in order for a minor, this was someone under the age of 18, to receive an abortion, they must receive parental consent to do so. You would think that that just simply makes sense, Dr. Youngblood.
Yes.
A child at school cannot receive an aspirin without parental consent.
That's right.
But here's the left saying that they can go have a surgical procedure of murdering a baby without parental consent. So what this bill will do is say that there must be parental consent before an abortion can be performed. That will save about 1,700 lives each year in Florida. If it saved 700, I would be fine with it. If it saved 7, I would be fine.
Amen.
But here's a bigger picture that I hope your listeners will grab a hold of, Dr. Youngblood. What that parental consent bill does is it directly challenges Florida's constitution, where, again, in 1982, a Florida Supreme Court stated that Florida's constitution, which has a privacy clause in it, allows a woman to abort a child. This bill, parental consent bill, directly challenges that privacy clause and that ruling that was erroneously made in 1982. So it is vital for that bill to get passed, even though it is helping 1,700 a year of the over 70,000 babies who are aborted each year in Florida. So it's vital to get that passed, and that opens the pathway for my heartbeat bill to then not be challenged based on Florida's privacy clause.
Amen. That's right. I find it antithetical when from the state level, all states across America, and on the federal level, through the State Department of Education and the legislative action to fund the State Departments of Education, we're funding clinics in our schools. And very frankly, I'm adamantly opposed to clinics in our public schools. We won't find anything in the U.S. Constitution and promulgated out of the U.S. Department of Education where there's the authority for taxpayers to pay for funding of clinics in the public schools, and those clinics having the authority to give abortions or to refer to abortionists to murder that child. So it is my prayer that this bill will stand up and will be passed. We've got about a minute left, Congressman. If you'll take this minute and wrap this broadcast up today, challenging our people, telling them how they can become involved, the numbers they need to call, and why it's so vital for all of these things we've talked about today for Christians and conservatives to stand and stand for truth.
Dr. Youngblood, as you know, we are right now in a battle for the soul of this nation, that there are those on the left who want to seek to destroy and take down what God has put in place for this great nation. God uttered his voice and told people to come to this nation so that they could establish a nation where he could be worshipped freely in spirit and in truth. And
yes,
the reason for that is for us to make sure we fulfill our destiny of preaching the gospel to a lost world.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today, Congressman. It's our delight always to have you on there, and we'll do this again. There's several other bills we need to talk about. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us today on Let's Face the Issues. Looking forward to next time as, once again, we face the issues.
9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. Sunday evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study. Prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in the same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard every evening, 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM. Tune in and invite others to listen.